Struck him out.
Says a lot about him.
Struck him out. Swung on and missed. Strike three. What a return for Edwin Diaz. Striking out the side in his first appearance in almost a year.
You know, I'm really encouraged by not just the player talent, but the type of person that we've hired into the organization. And so this is turning into a world-class organization. And so, you know, my hope, my goal would be that over time that creates sustainable winning. You know, make trades at the deadline that certainly boosted and accelerated the depth of the farm system, and we're starting to see the fruits of that. And so, listen, we got another draft coming up in a couple months. I mean, we're going to be, for the first time, I would say that we're starting to look stacked. Okay, I don't think I've ever would have used that term before. Okay, and that's a good feeling. Okay, so, you know, between that and our ability to use our resources in the free agency market, that's a pretty powerful combination. So I'm hopeful.
When you look at yourself and your teammates in this rotation, how good do you think this starting rotation can become in the National League East?
I feel like this is a very good rotation, and I think we got a really good mix. We got a lot of different arms, a lot of different ways coming at you. I feel like it's going to be tough to just, you know, kind of match up with this. I feel like we got a really good chance to win a lot of ball games with this team, and you know, I think the rotation can definitely lead the way.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, March the 17th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. Don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And of course, I want to welcome in the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Happy late Sunday. Happy St. Paddy's Day. Hope everybody's doing well. We have the start of the baseball season. There's a light at the end of the tunnel. The long, arduous journey of spring training is coming to an end. 2 weeks from today, we'll actually have regular season games, so we're right there. And I'm coming to you today with a grapefruit roundup. Not a long show, kind of a state of the union. We'll get deeper into the team next week as we prepare for opening day and kind of put a little bit of a bow on the spring and then talk about the regular season. We'll do some fun stuff there. But wanted to talk to you about a few things today. And really, the theme of this grapefruit roundup is this was probably the best week the Mets have had since the end of the 2022 season and the early off-season spending spree of 2022 into 2023. Really, and I hate to keep going back to this, this is the best week the Mets had since they signed Correa and then obviously everything that went after that. We've talked about that a lot, about how that was kind of a pall over the team, and then the Diaz injury and whatnot, and that's where we're going to start. You heard the highlight coming in. You may have saw it. You may have saw Diaz go out there and completely dominate Miami, striking out the side. One of the more anticipated spring training outings you'll ever have in Port St. Lucie. And if you were a subscriber to the newsletter, I even compared it a little bit, and maybe this is going over the top, to when Dwight Gooden came back in 1987 from his drug suspension and made his season debut against the Pirates. The Mets were struggling. They were malaise. And then all of a sudden, Doc is back and all is well. And that's probably a stretch. But look, there are a few reasons why this is the best week the Mets have had since the end of the 2022 season. Ever since really that San Diego series, and I know there was some highlights early in that offseason, it's been negative. Really, you could go back to the Atlantis series the week before. I mean, we're going on a year and a half of uncertainty, negativity, frustration, questions about this team after really having a 2022 season. And I know I'm looking back, and that's not what I want to do, but I think it's important to accentuate because there's been so much negativity, even after David Stearns took over and all the excitement and positivity you would feel with someone of that ilk taking over the organization. It was really marred by the firing of Buck, by how tepid they were going into free agency, losing out on Yamamoto. I mean, all sorts of questions. And you heard Steve Cohen today, and even he's getting excited. But, you know, he's getting challenged a little bit because now we're 4 years into his ownership and things have been rather inconsistent, similar inconsistencies to what you saw throughout the Wilpon ownership. But the first reason why it was such a good week was Edwin Diaz. Seeing him back on the mound, and I can't say this enough, and I know I wrote about it over at the newsletter, I can't say this enough. Maybe he's not the heart and soul of the team, because that's a lot maybe to say for a reliever that's going to pitch 60 times and pitch one inning somewhere late in the ballgame, the highest leverage inning maybe, but one inning. But he's certainly the team's identity, and I think as the 2022 season went along, and all the things that went well, we've talked about it. Hearing the trumpets, hearing Narcos, Timmy Trumpets doing his little acoustic version, I guess, at Citi Field in September against the Dodgers. And maybe that was when it all went wrong, right? We all were worried about it, even though the Mets got out of that inning with a save. Maybe that's when it all went wrong. Maybe that was the wrong culmination. But nothing really symbolizes this team than that song and Diaz coming out of the bullpen and dominating and leaving no doubt that the Mets are going to win the ball game. And I don't care what you think about this club. I think everybody can agree. And there's a lot of people that have different opinions about what this 2024 Mets club will do. I think everybody could agree that Diaz coming out of that gate to that song and the celebration when it's a home game that ensues at Citi Field, it's the best part of the game. It's the best part of really any part of the season. And now that he's back and he's healthy and he looked dominant, now, yeah, I don't even think he was going full mast. I mean, he was throwing 98 and he looked great, but I don't think he was revving it up, nor would you expect him to do that. And it was against Miami and there was a couple of big leaguers in there, but so what? It's spring training. It's Clover Park. It's 5,000 fans. There's no energy like there will be in just a couple of weeks if he comes out at Citi Field, even for an April ball game, an early April ball game. Having that sigh of relief that Diaz is back and healthy and all is well means so much. Because exactly what we felt the other day is what we lost just a year ago. I mean, it was almost a year ago to the day that Diaz had gotten hurt, and that was the first sign that 2023 was not going to be the season that we thought. Having the closer back in place aligns that bullpen perfectly. And we'll get into the starting rotation because I know they performed well this spring, and I know David Stearns has said it, and I'll say it because I'll say it on the offensive side, that has not performed well. I'm not getting crazy about any numbers. You know, you got split squads, some guys travel, some guys don't, wacky wind out there, sun fields in these ballparks. There's all sorts of things that you really can't take too seriously. Guys working on stuff, even more so than ever. I think that's what spring training has really become. But now that you have that aura of invincibility at the end of the ball game, I think we could all take that, you know, deep breath and say, okay, that's the first piece of 2024 positive going into place. Because let's face it, you all were thinking of it. And you were thinking of it all winter. You're like, you know, I know it's his patella tendon. I know it's not his arm. I know he said in interviews he could have came back at the end of last year if the standings were different. But I think we all, in the back of our heads, worry that, well, until we see the results, until we see the 98, and when he really gets into the regular season and dials it up to that 100, that's when we really know he's back. When you see him strike out, you know, a big middle of the order hitter like an Austin Riley or a Christian Yelich or somebody like that, and make them look foolish no matter how elite they are, that's when you know he's back. But this is the first sign that, hey, I think he's going to be okay. And that was so important for this organization and for this fan base and for everybody, to the point where even David Stern said it's one of the coolest spring training moments that he's ever seen. I've never seen so much anticipation. I mean, it was televised. I'm sure the Mets aligned everything that way too on SNY. And, you know, they tried to do this grand entrance. Now, it's not the same because, again, you're in that sleepy Port St. Lucie spring training. But it's huge, just huge to see Diaz back. So that's the first reason why this was a really good week, the first really good week in a long time. The second, I think, was on Friday afternoon. Now, I watched in and out the spring breakout game, the prospects, the Mets prospects playing the Nationals prospects. And, I mean, part of me, I wish the baseball would put these things in prime time. I know it's hard. You got spring training, and I'm sure that was their intent. But, you know, throw it at 3 o'clock on a Friday. Yeah, sure, people on a Friday sometimes kick out early. But if you're a baseball fan and you've got work or you've got responsibilities, it's really hard for you just to stop everything. Yeah, and you can record it. You can. I understand that, too. And this, I guess in this day of DVRs and MLB TVs, and it was hard actually to get the... And I have an MLB package, but maybe I messed this one up. I got the condensed game. I couldn't get the full game, but I saw enough of it, and I saw the guys. And look, we've been talking about Acuna and Gilbert and even Jet Williams. Just a couple of weeks ago, I said, these are the Energizer Bunnies, the jolt, the energy jolt that I think this team may get very soon, within the next three and a half months from maybe not Jet Williams, but certainly the other two guys. And I can see, them playing a big part in the 2024 Mets and maybe even enhancing the offense or maybe saving the offense if some of the things that we fear are going to go bad. Marte is done and can't consistently hit. Beatty or Vientos are a dud. Bader is a great defensive player, but, can't justify his glove with his bat. So many things that we worry about happening could happen. And maybe these kids come in and it all goes away. And certainly a couple of them in Acuna and Jet Williams are going to add this element of speed that the Mets really haven't had. I mean, they had a little bit with Reyes and maybe back with Dykstra and Backman, but even so, like, those guys could run. I mean, they're giving you, I'm not going to say they're going to be the 85 Cardinals, but they're more about those speed bunnies that you saw in the 80s with how they are than anything the Mets have ever had. So that's exciting. So you've heard about those kids. But the thing that we haven't really talked about, and it's not just about Christian Scott and Mike Vasil. I mean, you hear about those guys all off season, but all the arms you saw throughout that game throwing heat, that's what made you excited, I'm sure. And I have it right here. I mean, the velocities. Brandon Sproat, 99. Nolan McClain, the two-way player. Maybe the Mets' poor man's Ohtani, 98. Blade Tidwell, 98. Calvin Ziegler, we've forgotten about him because he's been hurt, 97. Tyler Stewart, another guy that gets a little bit overlooked because the talk is about Scott and Vasil, 97. Dom Hamill, 97. And you even go on this, and I told you on Fangraphs they have this Stuff Plus. And when you start to look at the Stuff Plus from the spring training leaders from these games, you've got Hamill and McClain and Junior Santos and Calvin Ziegler all at the top of this list. Nasty sliders, blazing fastballs, nasty curveballs. I mean, McClain here, Cohen even said with these 3,000 RPMs and all this stuff, whatever that means, like it's some kind of drill or something like that, or a car. It's really exciting. Now, you heard Cohen on the way in saying the Mets are stacked. I'm not ready to say that. I mean, nobody's really saying that. They have them ranked in the top third of the league or the top half of the league in farm systems, but most people have them 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. I think there's some marketing to that. I think that if, and this is a critical season, Stern's first season, if the Mets are going to start, we've talked about this time and time again, building a sustainable winner and being able to actually have a reasonable payroll where they could go out and if they want a JD Martinez, not get taxed up the you-know-what, then, to me, these kids coming through, having cost control pitching is huge. And maybe there's more options than we thought. We always say, well, it's Scott and it's Vasil, and maybe they're middle to back of the rotation. But then you start to see some of these other guys, the Zieglers, the Sprouts, and you're like, wow, well, they got live arms. Now, we all know injuries. Look, if you go to the top 10 pitchers from Fangraphs, I think somebody wrote this earlier today on Twitter. You go to the top 10 pitchers, and it was funny because last week I had said about the starting pitching crisis. And right away, Cole goes down, and you look at that. But look at last year. Top 10 pitchers, Bradish injured, Sonny Gray injured, Jarrett Cole injured, Kodai Senga injured, Justin Steele injured, Kevin Gausman's injured. You got Snell and Montgomery unsigned because they're asking for a ton of money. Verlander is injured. I mean, all these pitchers that had some of the lower ERAs last year in the league, all injured. So temper it a little bit. But I think for the first time, watching that game, seeing those guys pitch, seeing the velocity readings, getting some of the advanced analytics that came out of that game, and then hearing the owner talk about it, you got to feel really excited about where the Mets are at. I mean, really, truthfully, that to me is a huge takeaway. And yeah, you get excited about Acuna and Gilbert and even Ryan Clifford going the other way. I mean, look, sometimes you look at a guy like that, you're like, oh, is that another Joey Gallo, a guy that's just going to pop home runs and strike out a billion times? But I think the one thing that, as we learn this Mets organization in 2024, I think you're going to start to see guys come out of this farm system and emerge. I'm not saying they're going to be on the big league roster or have any impact on the 2024 Mets record, but I think at this time next year, there's going to be names on that top 15, top 20 that are going to be really enticing. Now, you're hearing reports that, and I love it because everybody loves to state the obvious. Well, David Stearns is, be in on Soto and guys like that, and the Mets will not afraid to use pitchers to get a cost, use prospects to get a cost control pitcher. Yeah, I get it. That's called common sense. That's how you run an organization. But the real conversation, and it may be, as we get towards the trade deadline, as these kids have some good seasons in 24, the Mets are in a position where they could use an arm or a bat, and it's a real big difference to put them in another level of conversation, not just the wild card muck. Be interesting how the Mets handle that. But that's putting cart way before the horse. But if you're not excited after watching that spring breakout game, even if you just watch the highlights and you saw some of those advanced metrics on the stuff these guys have and the velo these guys have, if they could get their command and their control and they could learn how to pitch, man, the Mets may have something. And they have a two-way guy, and I know that's pipe dream. No one's ever going to be, I don't know if we're ever going to see Ohtani again in our lifetime, really. But that really is exciting. And then the third part, I mean, that makes the week even better. So you start the week good with Diaz, you get better. But here's the thing, the Mets really actually do have some decent pitching. I know you're not excited about this rotation. I think the bullpen, nobody's really been complaining about. I think everybody likes what the Mets did with the bullpen. And part of that is what I just said. It's Diaz being back. Changes the whole dynamic of the bullpen. Slights everybody in a much better way. But when you look at Severino and how Severino has been this spring, when you look at Manaea and potentially what he could be, I know Tyler McGill didn't have the greatest outing today, but he still has that potential. You saw that in 2022 to give you spurts of top of the rotation performance. Adrian Hauser looks like he's a guy that could be really consistent. You know, maybe he'll have a stinker here or there, but he could be really, you know, consistently six innings, three runs in the back of the rotation. And then I wrote about this at Beyond the Mic. I mean, I didn't realize. I knew when Quintana was signed in the offseason, you know my position. I was so disappointed that they didn't bring back Chris Bassett. I still think that was a bad move. I think there was a big error on Billy Epler's part because I think last year would have been different, and I think you could have looked at this rotation, and you could still gotten Quintana. You could have still gotten him, and you could still gotten Kodai Senga. But I think passing on Bassett and the reasonable deal that he signed, the three-year deal with Toronto, was a big error. But when you look at Quintana, I didn't realize that over the last, since 2012, since he came into the league, he's top 10 in WAR. Now, he doesn't have a great record. He's not really flashy. And he had periods, especially when he's with the Cubs, where he was a lot more below league average than league average or even above league average or that number three. And realistically, I know he's not an ace. He's going to be maybe the ace on this club right now. He's not an ace in the mold of Cole. We know that in the mold of Wheeler or Gausman, a guy the Mets could have easily signed and tried to when they signed Scherzer a couple of years ago. But he's pretty solid. And it's funny, I'm talking about that today when both he and McGill didn't have great outings today. But that's not what this is about, these results in the spring. I think he's a guy on a walk year in his mid-30s who reinvented himself in St. Louis to a certain degree with his location and inducing soft contact. And a lot of people forget he was a big reason why the Cardinals made the playoffs in 2022. And he battled Zach Wheeler pitch for pitch in the division series in a game that, if the bullpen didn't implode, Quintana would have been on the right. Now, I don't think he would have got the win, because I think when he got taken out, it was a scoreless game. But Quintana would have been looked at as, hey, here's a guy that went up against one of the best pitchers in the game, pitch for pitch, in a postseason ball game. So you look at what's going on, and I haven't even gotten into the fact, forget about the Vazels or the Christian Scotts, or if any of these other kids can possibly, make their hay. I'm excited about Jose Buto, who seems to finally being put all together. Our friend Ernie Dove always liked Buto. You always heard that the Mets organization over the last few years have been bullish on Buto, but he never really showed numbers and results, and he was horrible as one chance in 2022 in Philadelphia. And then last year he came up, and he wasn't great, but he became better, and he was actually quite good in September when he got a chance to pitch. And now you have six guys, all of them, that I think, at the very least, and I know this is wildly unsexy, and it's not going to make them be a top 3, 4, 5 pitching staff, but you give me, when you don't have an ace and you're waiting for Senga to hopefully come back, 6 innings, 2-3 runs, and you hand it to the bullpen for 9 outs, 3 of which are going to be from the most dominant, if not 1 or 1A with Hader, closer in the game, I like my chances every night. And look, that's what this game is all about. Not to go back to Billy Epler, probabilistic outcomes. I like every night, if things are going to fall, as you started to see in spring training, and we're now deeper into spring where you would start to see, cracks in the armor with some of these guys. And again, when the games count, it's a different situation. Can Manaea be what he was at the end of the year with San Francisco when the games count? Can Severino be healthy and be the old Severino when the games count? Can McGill be like he's been in spring training when the games count? They're not always going to be dominant. They're going to have stinkers. They're not the guys that you could guarantee, like a Scherzer when he's healthy, they're going to go out there and give you a great performance every night. But out of 30 starts or 28 starts, maybe you get quality starts in, 20 to 25 of them where they go 6 innings. That's a huge help. And I think it could happen. And you got guys like Hauser that are on, and that's the thing. You got some guys who have things to prove. Hauser, who's a free agent. Quintana's a free agent. Manaea's got a deal, but I'm sure he'd love to get some of this pitching money that's out there if he could opt out and get a big, big contract. Severino, this is his chance to revive his career and maybe eventually get his big contract. I mean, with the way that money's being thrown around with pitching, these guys have big years and opt out. The money's going to be there. Whether it's with the Mets or not, it's going to be there. So having that bit of a chip on their shoulder, that makes all the difference. You feel the positive vibes around the camp. There's nothing but positive. And again, I always say, if you can't be positive in Port St. Lucie, then you know you're having a bad season. Then you know you're in for a really lousy season. So when you look at this week in Mets baseball, this has been the best week to feel really good about this club since Carlos Correa signed in the middle of the night and you thought the Mets were on the verge of building a juggernaut. And even if you want to take that whole free agency thing out because of how that offseason ended, you really haven't felt this good about this club maybe since August of 2022 after they took 4 out of 5 from Atlanta. Because all of September was a grind down the stretch. It's been a long time since you've had a reason to feel good. And even the media is kind of getting into it, because the media doesn't want to give you permission to feel good. You know that. They don't want to give you permission to feel good. Hey, it's your buddy Mike Silva. Let's take a quick call to the bullpen here on the Talking Mets podcast. Are you enjoying the show? Of course, or else you wouldn't be listening. Want more Talking Mets? Of course you do. Now that wish can become a reality with Talking Mets Beyond the Mic. Why wait till Sunday to get your Talking Mets fix when you can get it throughout the week? Talking Mets Beyond the Mic is the Substack newsletter complement to the show. For just $5 a month, less than a cup of coffee, you could get multiple weekly long and short form columns, instant analysis on audio and video to breaking news, memories of Mets history and old shows from my secret vault, and listen to the weekly Talking Mets podcast commercial free. It's simple. Go to substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG and sign up today. Full year subscribers even get a special discount. What more could you ask for? Don't wait. Go now and sign up for the Talking Mets Beyond the Mic newsletter. All right, now that you've done that, let's get back to Talking Mets. They want you to feel lousy, but even they're like, hey, these prospects are interesting. They were into the Diaz thing. It's hard to be negative this week covering the Mets. It really is. Now, before we wrap up this State of the Union, this very short State of the Union, let's get into the roster, because I think the roster is pretty much about to be set. And I was wrong early in the offseason. I was pretty much had predicted the positional players. I didn't expect Choi. Now, Choi, when I first predicted the roster, wasn't with the team. I think G-Man Choi is going to make this club. It does not look like, and you listen to Cohen today, it does not look like they're going to make a late push for J.D. Martinez. Every time Vientos, who's had an awful spring offensively, hears footsteps with the fans of the media saying he stinks and they should send him down and they should bring in J.D. Martinez or even J.D. Davis, who I was all for, and it sounded like they were close to maybe bringing him in. I mean, he goes out and does what he did today, hits a 3-run homer. So it looks like we're going to get a steady diet, at least for the first month or two, of Brett Beatty and Mark Vientos in some capacity. But I think against right-handed pitching, I think G-Man Choi, who we've talked about on this show, who is a guy that has a little bit of pop, gets on base, hits the ball hard, produces enough runs against right-handed pitching to be in that conversation where you could feel like, okay, I against that as a lefty against righties, he's not J.D. Martinez, but it's not like he's chopped liver. And he's more established than D.J. Stewart. He could play for a space and spell Alonso. It just feels like a team that's built on analytics. This is kind of an analytics type of guy. And he was good enough for the Rays for many, many years in their success, so why not the Mets? So I think Choi is going to make the team. I'm curious about how they're going to fit him on the 40-man roster. Is Max Cranick going to go to the 60-day DL? And that gets me into the pitching part, because now Sean Reed Foley, and that's where I was like, okay, how are the Mets going to work this pitching? We know, you know, Lucchesi was sent down, so we know all that, you know, is all. And Buto, despite being great this spring, and he might be the Darren Reed Award. I got to tell you, I mean, the Darren Reed Award, you look at Jose Iglesias, Tyrone Clay Thomas's brother. I'm drawing a blank on his first name. you know, you got him. You've got Trace Thompson. Jeez, how can I? You got Trace Thompson, Jose Iglesias. I mean, even Nate Lavender. I mean, he got sent down. He only pitched 3 or 4 innings, but he could be in the mix. So you have all that. But Fujinami is the guy that I thought was going to, even though we had options, I said, well, maybe he'll start the season with the club. He's looked electric at times in spring training, and then maybe they'll shuttle him a little bit if they need a 6th starter or whatnot. Right now, and I don't think it's just that outing that he had where he couldn't get any ball over the plate, looked like Ricky Vaughn in Major League. But I think because he's got options, it just makes too much sense not to use them, because you're going to lose someone. Johan Ramirez has been great. There was an article today, I think it might have been the New York Post, where he talked about working with Pedro and Ramon Martinez down in the Dominican Republic. seems like he, against righties, he could be very dominant. We talked about this before, inducing weak contact, has a little bit of that Diaz to his delivery. And then Sean Reed Foley, and I know this might be at the expense of like a Phil Bickford and losing him. Sean Reed Foley was another name I said, you know, these guys are pitching well, and Reed Foley pitched really well when he first came over in 2021 before he got hurt. Don't lose these guys to waivers, because you're going to lose probably some guys that you don't want to waivers. I think that's fair. It's possible. You know, bring them north, see what they got, and if it doesn't work out, then, you know, designate them in April. You might have a better shot at keeping them because everybody's rosters are set at that point. But now Reed Foley's arm is barking, so that kind of changes the whole equation here. So the real question is, how are they going to build this bullpen? And right now today, and I'm going to Roster Resource, and I pretty much agree with it. I think Michael Tonkin, who I've been like, eh, but the more you hear Mendoza talk about him and the innings he can provide, I think he's got a spot. Jorge Lopez, Diekman, Drew Smith, Brooks Raley, Ottavino, and Diaz there. And then I think it's going to be Johan Ramirez, and I think Sean Reed Foley might be going on the DL. You know, maybe they put him on the DL to get some more work down in Port St. Lucie because his shoulder's barking a little bit. My concern with Reed Foley, and I think this is where it's always been a concern since he came over here, he can't stay healthy. So to bring a guy like that and lose Tonkin, because you're going to lose Tonkin probably if you don't bring him north. That's a risk, especially when you have a rotation that's not guaranteed to give you those seven innings right now. This is a guy that on certain days might need to bridge the gap and give you two or three innings. I've always said since they brought him on, he's that veteran that at 34 years old has a rubber arm. They're not going to worry about him. They're just going to pitch the bejesus out of him all the time. And he was good enough, again, I talk about it, good enough for Atlanta to help eat innings over there. Why not here for the Mets? So I think the roster's pretty set. I think Choi's going to make it. I don't see how he can't at this point. I think DJ Stewart has options, will get designated. I don't think, and I'd like them to look, I still think, and I don't know. I mean, maybe Martinez is going to sit back and see how things transpire when the regular season starts. And it's like amazing. Here we are like 10 days away from opening day. Montgomery, no job. Snell, no job. Martinez, no job. I mean, these are big name guys. Martinez, I guess I could understand a little bit. The other two, shocked. Never would have had that on the bingo card when we got the hot stove started. So really exciting. It looks like the light is at the end of the tunnel. The dog days of spring training are about to be behind us. The regular season is just 11 days away. Mets opening up against the Brewers. How ironic is that? And it looks like the roster is being crystallized. I don't really think these positional battles right now, there's a lot to argue unless there's an injury or something really changes. I think Tonkin makes it. I think Ramirez makes it. I don't think Reed Foley makes it. I think Fujinami gets sent down. I think Choi makes the roster. DJ Stewart gets sent down. And then the question is, how do they fit Choi in the 40-man? Do they put Kranick on the 60-day DL? Do they designate Zach Short? Do they designate a pitcher like Reed Garrett? I don't think so. I don't think they're going to designate any arms. It's pretty cut and dry. And then your rotation with Senga out is Quintana, Severino, Manaea, Hauser, McGill. Senga will be out probably at least until the middle of May. I think June 1st. I think they're going to get this right. This is a methodical, patient organization. It's driving you nuts. I know that. It's driving you nuts as a fan. It drives the media nuts because they don't like not having a lot of hot takes and things to talk about. But that's where we're at. But this is a good week. The takeaway now is this is a good week. Feel good about being a Mets fan listening to this. Feel good about maybe things finally starting to be the beginnings. I'm not saying they're coming together. The beginnings of coming together. And look, there's so much more to learn about this team. We're just learning about this organization. And we finally learned. Look, that's part of what we talked about was going to happen all year. During the spring breakout game on Friday, we learned they got some arms. Now, can these guys pitch and contribute at the big league level? We don't know yet. They still have a lot of work to do. And most of them, if not all of them, will not be on the radar this year. But next year at this time, we could be having a different conversation. And I think that's why Steve Cohen's excited. I don't know if I want to use the word stacked like he did, but look, Steve likes to use those kind of like big, you know, go big words type of deal. But there's reason to be excited. I think there's a lot of reason to be excited. And you got to get, I know I still get emails. I still hear people say, it's a 72-win team. It's a 77-win team. Look, you can go and you can be negative about pretty much anything you want about this team. But even look at the Padres. They traded an all-time player, a Hall of Famer this offseason. They got a decent return. We'll see. And they go out and they go and get Dylan Cease and they trade for him because they're looking at the landscape just like David Stearns is looking at the landscape, just like Steve Cohen talked about the landscape and said, you got the Dodgers who are the 96 Bulls, perhaps. You've got the Braves who are really good. And maybe you have the Phillies who have this pedigree of winning that they've built under Dombrowski. But what else do you have? Why not the rest of the league is like, take them in a hat and shake it up. And maybe you get three teams that you don't expect. I mean, who had Miami in the playoffs last year? And now they have pitching injuries. So there's no reason to punt in this three wild card world on anything. And in the tournament that is the baseball playoffs now, there's no reason to ever punt, in my opinion. So there's that. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in. I know it's a little shorter show today. State of the Union, Grapefruit League, State of the Union, Grapefruit Roundup, State of the Union. We're going to have some fun stuff over at the newsletter this week. So if you haven't signed up, please go over there. Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. You can go over there and we're going to be looking at different lineups. So we're going to get into the lineup conversation over at the newsletter. And I'm sure as we get closer and closer to the end of the week, we'll continue to look at the roster and see if anything new comes out. Maybe there'll be J.D. Martinez news. I outlined, if you want to go back and look, I outlined J.D. Martinez and J.D. Davis. I thought J.D. Davis and him coming over here would have been a great opportunity for the Mets to bolster the offense. I always like J.D. and I wish him well in Oakland, but I understand the decision he made. He wants to get paid. He just lost a couple million dollars from what happened in San Francisco. He goes to Oakland, plays every day, puts up big numbers. So, that's it. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this latest edition of the Talking Mets podcast. Of course, you can check me out all the time at the Talking Mets podcast.com. Send me on, you can get me on X, or send me a tweet. I always get that little screwed up. Talking Mets, no G. And of course, you get the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcast you serve you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Still at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G. Mike Still at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And of course, I want to thank the good folks and fans. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then, take care.